Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Bobby Bell, right here on LA Talk Radio.
It is another Thursday night. This is LA Talk Radio. You are listening to The Writer's Block. My name is Jim Christina. I am your host for the evening. In studio with my lovely co-host, Bobby Jean Bell, and her husband, Jim, sitting over there, holding up not only a chair, but also a set of headphones.
Yes, so he can listen in.
So he can listen in tonight.
But his mic's not on.
We have a really cool person coming in to be on the show with us tonight. So how's your week been? Oh, you told me the story about, oh my God.
Which story?
Bobby does another radio show on Thursday mornings, Campfire Cafe.
Yes.
And I guess this morning they lost the host.
We just had a little technical glitch, and Gary was right on it and right back on top of it, and it's live radio. It's just, you know, things happen.
Yep. Just like live TV, people's pants fall down.
Yeah, stuff happens. But we so enjoy this platform and being able to bring creative spirits, to the public. It's just wonderful.
We do both
shows. That's what we do.
We do. We actually enjoy it a lot. And I'm going to get right into the show tonight. We have, of course, calling in our very one and only and favoritest person in the whole wide world, Henry Park. Henry, are you with us? Oh, here we go again. Okay, let me see.
Henry likes that delayed entrance.
Merge. I'm going to merge him.
Ooh.
And
right.
Okay. Hey, Henry.
I've never been merged live before.
Have you? Was it good for you?
It's better every time.
Okay, then.
So, hi, Henry. Okay.
What's happening, my friend?
Well, let's see. Now, I'm just curious. Well, it's great to be back with you. I was wondering if either of you got to that John Mitchum CD release party at Paramount Ranch.
I got Bobby Jean when I did.
Yes, I went. My husband Jim and I went on Sunday. We were not able to make it to the wonderful gathering that also happened Saturday night, but we went on Sunday. And, there were a lot of really cool people there, folks that I didn't really know that I got to meet. And, Paramount Ranch is such a very special place. It's just filled with history. Tell our audience about Paramount Ranch, Henry.
The history of it is kind of strange because it goes back to the very early talkie days as a movie ranch, and was very active for a long time. Lots of big westerns and non-westerns shot there, and then it kind of fell into disrepair and was pretty much gone for a while. But when the western western towns started disappearing and they needed places to shoot, a family from back east, and I can't think of the name offhand, bought up a bunch of the old RKO western town, which was in the San Fernando Valley, and moved it over to the old location of Paramount Ranch. This was all stuff that had been built for the 1930s version of Cimarron. So then it became like a completely new western town. And starting in the 50s, did tons of shooting there again, 50s and 60s. And when that fell into disrepair again, they fixed it up when they decided to do Dr. Quinn Medicine Woman.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And rebuilt it to the old RKO specifications of Paramount.
Sure.
Yeah, it's a wonderful setting. So yeah, it was a quite a fun afternoon. We were glad to be able to be there. It was really fun.
Right, that's great. Well, now, of course, we've had some sad news this week. We lost Hugh O'Brien at 91.
Yes, we did.
Yeah, wonderful career. Great as a lawman, TV's Wyatt Earp, but he also made a great villain in westerns like Broken Lance.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe... Yes?
Go ahead.
I was just going to say... Yeah, I think he holds the distinction of being the last man killed on screen by John Wayne.
By John Wayne, yes.
Oh.
Yeah, the gambler.
That's
yes.
Well, the dealer,
yes.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah, when you're dealing, it's not gambling anymore.
No, that's right. That's right. He also was in The Music Man, and a lot of people don't know that about him. In fact, I remember him doing something on one of the talk shows back in the 70s about the, you know, it's there's trouble in River City. There's trouble with a T that rhymes with P at Stanford Pool.
Well, I saw him in Guys and Dolls.
I'm sorry?
I saw him in Guys and Dolls.
A lot of people did.
And I put that on Facebook yesterday because he was, besides Roy Rogers, he was my very first, they were my first two Western heroes. And I couldn't believe that my parents, we had never gone to live theater. It was just not something we did. But they, my mom saw an ad that the local summer stock company was going to be doing Guys and Dolls, and it was going to be starring Hugh O'Brien and Anita Bryant. And they decided, you know, let's go ahead and get tickets. And he came running down an aisle, you know, to get up on stage. He played Masterson. I can't think what the first character was. Sky Masterson. And I couldn't believe it. It's like, oh, my gosh, that's Wyatt Earp singing.
So that was her first crush.
That
she had the hots for
Roy,
Hugh O'Brien.
Roy Rogers and Hugh O'Brien. yeah.
Oh, well, it used to be a staple at my house, Life and Legend of Wyatt Earp. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
That's great stuff.
It was good stuff. Good stuff.
Oh, yeah.
So what else you got for us, Henry?
Well, of course, now, fires have been taking their toll. Back in the end of July, our California wildfires destroyed the Sable Ranch Western Movie Ranch.
Yes, and burned it down, yeah.
Some of those buildings dated back to the turn of the century, which I did not realize.
Right.
Now, this past Saturday, in Cambridge, Ohio, the Hopalong Cassidy Museum burned to the ground.
Yes, I heard that. Yeah. Yes, I heard that.
This was a town where William Boyd grew up, and so it's a great loss to them. And happily, I've heard from Julianne Ream that a good deal of the memorabilia was saved.
Oh, good.
Oh, that's good.
Good. Yeah. Is she going to put it in her closet with all the other stuff?
I wouldn't be surprised.
Now, no offense, Julian.
If you're looking for something
we love you.
To do Saturday night, and you'd like to experience what ranch life was like in the late 1800s, the annual Cops and Cowboys 2016, a fundraiser for the Mid-Valley Community Police Council, is going to be held at the historic Leona's Adobe in Calabasas, which is one of the very oldest surviving residences in Southern California.
Cool.
Yeah. It's cool. A wonderful place. There will be livestock to look at, delicious barbecue to eat, great country music, gambling, and booze. And
did you say booze or
family
food?
Was last to live there.
Oh, okay.
Someone you know, John Carradine and family.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, that's right, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
Well, now, next Friday, September 16th, the Real Cowboys will be presenting the Silver Spur Awards at the Sportsman's Lodge in Studio City. It's going to be emceed by Bruce Boxleitner, and honorees, presenters, and other attendees include one of John Wayne's frequent co-stars, Eddie Faulkner, Walton's mom, Miss Michael Learned, her TV daughter, Judy Norton, West Doom constable, Lester Bayless, actors like Morgan Woodward, Martin Landau, Johnny Crawford, Bill Benson, Louis Goff Jr., Janet Arnett and Wyatt McCrae.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Star-studded.
Yes.
That's a hard act to follow.
Upcoming Tuesday, September 20th, one of the most knowledgeable Western nuts in the world, Rob Bird, will be holding another Award on Westerns presentation at the Autry. His topic this time is early 70s Westerns, time of transition, and scheduled guests include Ryan O'Neill of the Wild Rovers.
Oh, wow.
Former Miss Universe Karina Fields from A Man Called Force, Ann Robinson, Rawhide, Sugarfoot, Cheyenne, so many others. Former child actor Tommy Nolan was very active at the time. And, please pick up the new October True West. Read my article about the making of Clint Eastwood's classic, The Outlaw Josie Wells.
Oh, okay.
I was very lucky to get to talk with his co-star Sandra Locke and stunt coordinator Walter Scott. And the history of this film is amazing. And dare I say, you can read about all of this and more at www.henryswesternroundup.blogspot.com.
You know, we keep score.
Well,
and
I lost that.
And it's your website. Hey, I just briefly want to real quick tell you that we missed you last week. We had a great show with Steve Carver and Court. We're in here, and they were just both of them just wonderful.
Oh, well, they're both such talented guys.
They really, truly are. And Steve is such a gentleman. And, of course, Court Joyner is Court Joyner. There's not much you can do with him. So
There you are.
Take him on a leash. What are you going to do? Anyway, thanks for the call, Henry.
You betcha. Great talking to you guys.
We'll talk to you in a couple weeks, bud.
I look forward to it.
Okay, bye-bye.
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 Henry Park. And you know that the Writer's Block is brought to you by Black Dog Publishing in Simi Valley, by Out West Boutique and Cultural Center. See, I got it right this time. In Newhall, California. And by Target Freight Management in Pittsburgh. And you know, we mention Target Freight every week, just like we mention Black Dog, like we mention Out West. Because they have a full truckload service. That's the best in the industry. But have we mentioned that Target Freight truckload is the finest in the industry and gets your freight there every time, on time, at the rates you need for your transportation costs? So call Target today at 844-653-7789. Tell them you heard it on the Writer's Block, and they'll have some little something extra for you. And while we're at it, if you are an LTL shipper, which is less than truckload, you are probably looking for the best rates with the very least hassle. Call Target Freight Management. Their customized transportation management system is just the ticket in getting your freight moved your way. Call Target Freight Management today at 888-653-1323 or go to www.targetfmi.com on the web. Call today. You won't be sorry. Actually, I talked to Mike today, and he's still trying to get out here, so it'd be fun to have him in the studio. If you want to talk to tonight's guest, which I sincerely hope that you do, our number here is 818-602-4929. That's 818-602-4929. Now, to Dallas, Texas. Okay. All righty. When not writing, Jean Skartziaris also works as a sonographer. She's going to have to explain what that is, because, like me, I'm Italian. I don't have any idea what a sonographer does. Prior to that, she was a medical/legal photographer for a plaintiff's law firm. She attended creative writing courses at Southern Methodist University and is a member of Romance Writers of America and the local chapter, Dallas Area Romance Authors. Also, the author of Surviving Life, Snow Globe. She lives in Dallas, Texas. Look for Jean on Facebook at Jean Skartziaris, author, and Twitter at J. Skartziaris. Her web address is www.jeanskartziaris.com. And man, that's a mouthful. Say that three times really fast and you trip over your tongue.
I try to write it and get it spelled correctly.
Would you please welcome to the Writer's Block, Jean Skartziaris. Are you with us, Jean? We may have lost her. How could that happen? There we go. Okay, let's call her back. Okay.
We're calling back,
Jean. We are calling back, Jean.
Getting Dallas on the line.
I think I lost you when I hung up on Henry. Oh, that's
okay,
what I did.
Okay, good. I didn't think you really wanted to talk to me.
Oh, no. Hi, Jean.
Hi, Jean. Welcome to the Writer's Block.
Man, I'm going to have to go.
Having a little self-esteem issue.
Well, don't, because I'm having the self-esteem issue right at the moment.
It's live radio.
It's like, yeah, your pants fall down. What are you going to do? So, how many glasses of wine are you into now? Be honest.
Glasses or bottles? I'm sorry, glasses or bottles?
Bottles.
I just actually took the last sip after you disconnected.
Oh, okay. That's it. I wouldn't blame you at that point.
No, I'm kidding.
Bobby and I both read your latest book, which has not yet hit publication.
No, we got the advanced copy.
You gave me this morning some information on what's going on with that, which is, you don't know. But the name of the book is Dance Like You Mean It. And I have to tell you that I had, like I told you on the phone this morning, I had a little bit of a hard time catching the rhythm of the book, because you do bounce back and forth, because it is a novel within a novel.
But I didn't.
Yes. Yeah, Bobby Jean didn't. I did, because I'm a guy. But once I got the rhythm of the book, it was fascinating. Are you still with us?
That's good.
Oh, yeah, okay. We're good. You can be a little bit more talkative than that. It's okay.
Well, I didn't know. Yes, well, so far you've got the unedited version. I have not even gotten an official, I haven't gotten an editor yet. So this is still a rough draft.
Well,
wow, it's a pretty good rough draft.
It's a pretty damn good rough draft,
yeah,
I have to say.
I wouldn't cut anything.
Well, I put a little more sex in it, but, you know.
So that's kind of the whole point. It is, the sex in it is, it's all kind of metaphorical.
Well, yes, it is.
Kind of tongue-in-cheek and fun.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Yes, it is. So, you have a passage in there, or actually a scene in there. And I don't want to get too involved in talking about the story because, it's still not published. But there is a scene when Cassie's mother is very, very sick. And she asks if she will give her any advice. And she looks at her and she says, "Don't ever wear black socks with tennis shoes."
Yes.
There's a lot of wonderful humor in this book.
There really is.
Tell us a little bit about Dance Like You Mean It. What sort of set it up for our listeners? Tell us a little bit about it.
It was the first book that I ever wrote, and I just got the idea, and actually from my mother, and this is kind of funny because my mother raised four kids by herself. You know, and we were really bratty kids. And she worked two jobs. She had a day job and a night job. Would, you know, make dinners on Sunday so we'd have food. And as an adult, for me, she was watching this TV show with some punk rocker. And she was looking at this punk rocker, and this woman had spike hair. She had duct tapes on her nipples, and she was screaming into a microphone.
Wow.
And she was making a ton of money. And my mother looked at me, she goes, "If I knew that's all I had to do to make money to raise you kids, I would have done that."
40 years ago.
And so that gave me the idea of, you know, just a mom who wrote, you know, some, because I couldn't imagine my mother being on stage doing that. So, you know, a mother who wrote a steamy romance,
mm-hmm.
and then had to answer for it, you know, because she couldn't let her own daughter read it. She couldn't let, you know, her family read it.
Right.
You know, didn't realize it was going to take off like it did.
Well, she's a very staunch, stoic nurse.
Yes.
Yeah.
Cassie.
And she's like, yeah, like a pillar of her community. And golly, you can't let anybody know that you wrote that kind of stuff.
Right. Would you want a nurse, you know, a medical professional writing stuff like that?
You're asking me or Bobby Jean?
That was kind of the thing she could let her patients know she wrote it. So that's the big, you know, the conflict in the story is that she had to hide and go incognito the book signings when it became such a big hit.
Well, and for me...
And then, of course, her older daughter is reading it. You know, she catches her older daughter reading it. Mm-hmm. So she has to deal with that. And both stories parallel each other.
Uh-huh.
Yes, they do.
You know,
they do.
In their own way.
Yeah, they do, and it's kind of really cool the way you do it, you know, because you leave one and you go into the other, but it's almost the exact same scenario. So it's kind of cool the way you do it. Yeah, it's like a parallel universe. Yeah. Other than she's in Dallas.
I'm glad you noticed that because that was my intention.
Yeah, well, you made it. She's in Dallas and Rosemary's in L.A. So
right,
and she drives a 71 MG.
We all want to be Rosemary. All women,
don't we?
Women want to be Rosemary.
Bobby told me that today, and I went, "Oh God!"
I mean, she just because we do. We want her lifestyle. We want her looks. We want her ease with herself. We want her independence. We want to know that that we turn heads, even though, you know, we don't spend a lot of time primping in order to do that. Just that natural beauty that she has.
The inner confidence.
And she's talented. You know, she's good at what she does. And it's interesting that you chose. Why did you choose that particular time period of the 70s to put her in?
Because it was pre everything.
Yeah,
you know, it was pre AIDS. Pre, mm-hmm. you know, it was just pre living and being a hippie, and you know.
Free love.
And there was a little bit of the women's lib issues coming in. You know, women were still considered inferior. It was hard for a woman to you know, make a good living or not you know, to compete with men.
Sure.
And she was a photographer, and she wanted to be a photojournalist, which was more of a man's job. And her agent would send her out on these little fluff jobs. And she wanted something a little more gritty right. and tried to prove herself. So it was just that time era. And plus, she was so, you know, sexually loose that, you know, you couldn't do that in the 80s or 90s. So
right, right.
You know, and plus, there had to be a little link of time where the Cassie and Rosemary story come together years later.
Sure.
Right.
You know.
So you.
I don't want to give away the end.
No. We don't want
so,
to.
So Eugene, as the author, having kind of written a book within a book, sort of a steamy romance within a book, did you think as you were writing this, like, I don't know that I would want my daughter to read this, you know, or
well,
I don't
told
know
my
about
daughter,
my...
She's not allowed to read it.
So you're kind of dealing with the same issues that Cassie was dealing with?
Yeah. So my daughter's 24. And I'm like, no, you can't read this book.
Grab it out of her hand and run into the other room.
I haven't even told her about Santa Claus yet. You know, I can't.
Oh, man.
Well, I'm not a writer, and so I don't think about this very much. But Jim, even you as a writer too, when you're writing, do you think to yourself, I want the world to read this, or oh, I'm not sure that I would want my neighbor to read this, but you write anyway.
No,
you know? No.
I never.
Oh yeah, you just write. And actually, I will say, writing some of those sex scenes, I'm laughing.
Yeah.
While I'm doing it, and I'm looking around, going, is anybody walking in the room? You know. I have to leave the house when I write. I can't write at home.
You know, I did a book called Still Waters, and in the front of the book, this character, the hunter, he's like in his 60s, and he hooks up with this woman not her daughters, but her, and she's like probably mid-30s. And I'm sitting here, I'm writing this thing, and I'm trying to figure out, okay, how does a guy in his 60s hook up with a chick in her 30s in 1882?
He has to be really rich. Really cool horse.
He's got money, but he lives in a little shack. I mean, you know, the guy. But she doesn't care. She wants him. So you have to write sex scenes for a 64-year-old guy.
They didn't have Viagra back then. Yeah.
Oh, well, they didn't, you know. But yes.
So, Gene, how did you do your research for those sex scenes?
Home videos.
You know, who does a good job writing sex is like Sandra Brown.
Yeah.
And I will read her books, and I'm blushing. You know, I'll be sitting on an airplane reading her book, and all of a sudden I come to a sentence. I'm like, oh, my gosh. And I look over, making sure that nobody's reading over my shoulder, you know, the guy sitting next to me. But I wonder how she does it. Is she writing? Is she just passionate as she's writing? Or is she kind of laughing?
She's probably chuckling, too.
Yes. You mean Cassie, your character, as she's writing those scenes?
Or like Sandra Brown, how she was able to be so confident in writing, but to actually sit down and do it. I mean, I was laughing the whole, or not laughing, but I was like embarrassed even writing some of them.
Well, you're a wonderful writer.
For a first novel, I have to tell you, it was pretty good. It was pretty good.
I'm sorry?
For a first novel, it was pretty good.
No.
Oh, well, thank you.
Sure.
But you had the other two books that were published, have been published.
Yes.
Snow Globe and Surviving Life. So when you say this was your first novel,
was the first novel that I wrote, and I had no idea what I was doing.
Gotcha.
So I just threw stuff out on the paper and just, you know, I think the story was good, but my technique was not. Snow Globe, and actually there's another book in between there that hopefully will come out eventually. Snow Globe and Surviving Life are young adult books. And those kind of helped me craft the technique a little bit better.
I see.
And they're young adult.
Mm-hmm.
They're good, you know, reads for any age.
Well, Snow Globe.
There's no sex in it.
Yeah, Snow Globe is a wonderful, wonderful read. Asia, the main character, is absolutely delightful. Yes, I suppose if I was a teacher, she'd be my worst nightmare. But you got to absolutely love her. And I really enjoyed the scenes in the she works for a while in a assisted living retirement, you know, wonderful kind of posh place. But my mom is living in a place kind of like that now. And my mom's only lived there about a year. But some of her experiences living there are some of the experiences that Asia runs into. So I feel it's maybe young adult, but I am totally captivated by it, and I am not a young adult.
Well, actually, the home that assisted living home, my mother-in-law lives in one, and so it is fashioned after that. She's in Kalamazoo, Michigan. And you know, it's a cool place. I mean, I'd like to be there.
Yes.
You know, lots of activities and things that they do, beautiful dining area.
Yep.
But the whole intent of that novel was to bring teenagers and elderly together,
mm-hmm.
that they help each other, because the elderly is such a great resource.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And you know, that just they are often forgotten, and what an opportunity to be able to bring teens and seniors together, mm-hmm. that they could help each other.
Well, you do that in Dance Like You Mean It.
Yeah, Dance Like You Mean It.
Dance Like You Mean It. You do that with Cammy and Cassie's mother.
Mm-hmm.
You give them a relationship that she doesn't have with her own mother. That Cammy doesn't have,
yeah.
with her mother,
mm-hmm.
but she has with her grandmother.
And sometimes you can have that with your grandparents.
Yeah,
you know,
they're easier to talk to,
more
I think.
Easily.
Mm-hmm.
They spoil you, you know.
Yeah, not
they
my family.
They get you a little bit better.
They just had a bigger stick.
No, they gave you more candy when you were younger.
No, not mine. If you didn't behave, you got anchovies in your pasta.
There's a lot of there's a lot of dialogue in your books. Do you enjoy writing dialogue? Is that easy? Is that difficult? Tell us a little bit about your dialogue process.
I think it's easier to write dialogue. I'm more of a visual writer, so I try to just picture the scene and, you know, hear the voices.
Mm-hmm.
And when I write, the characters move the story forward. It's not
sure.
me. You know, I'm typing along going, where are we going to go next? And then the characters go one way, and I want them to go another way, but I can't get them over there. So it's kind of an interesting process. You know, it's all character-driven. And the dialogue just, you know, it's just kind of what they're saying in my head.
Mm-hmm.
That's the problem. I have voices in my head.
Well, we all do.
Yeah. I have a laptop. I'm able to do something about it.
I got you, damn it.
I know. At least I'm going to get them out somehow.
There you go.
So, you know, it's been fun, and I just, you know, hope that Dance Like You Mean It is, you know, well-received, and, you know, once it finally gets out there. The publishing date we don't have yet. It may be February 2017. I've also heard possibly December 2016. So I'm just keeping my fingers crossed, mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. I get that call from the editor any day,
mm-hmm.
so we can get this thing moved forward.
When you title your book, does the title come to you before you start to write? Does the title appear as you're writing? How did you choose the titles for these books?
Dance Like You Mean It came to me when I was about halfway through. That had about three other titles before I finally hit Dance Like You Mean It. Surviving Life and the Story came kind of together, because it is a story about a mother, an overprotective mom, who won't let her daughter do anything, so the daughter, you know, runs away, and the mom is so worried about her daughter that, you know, she's just, the poor kid has no life at all, and an accident happens where the mom thinks the daughter has been killed. So it's a, you know, another kind of bi story where the mom and the daughter have two separate stories in,
mm-hmm.
the book.
Mm-hmm.
The mom goes off on her own adventure because she has no reason to live anymore. The daughter's in a camp in Colorado and winds up getting lost in a forest fire. And it was just that Surviving Life title was perfect for, they were both just trying to survive life without each other, and
mm-hmm.
You know, until the happy ending. As far as Snow Globe, you know, I don't know. That just kind of sparked, because Asia is actually based on a friend of mine's goddaughter who has these psychic abilities. And the mom in the book is based on my aunt, who is very politically active, you know, very interesting woman. And so, I don't know, I just was thinking, you know, picturing a room mm-hmm. with, you know, what a psychic reader would use. So I just thought a crystal ball, a snow globe.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Mm-hmm. It's a good, good. We have, you know, we got a break real quick. We have to sell some more commercial airtime. So, hang tough. Okay. We're going to be back to you in about 30 seconds, and okay. we're going to have Bobby take it away.
Thank you.
Sutter's Mill in Simi Valley is one of the finest steakhouses in Ventura County. At Sutter's, you will find casual dining with a touch of elegance in a rustic steakhouse atmosphere. Their well-trained staff strives to provide their guests with a great dining experience. At Sutter's, you will find the finest in steaks and seafood, along with specialty items such as barbecued pork ribs and deep-fried chicken or shrimp. Sutter's offers a full bar with special happy hour pricing and never charges a corkage fee. Visit their website at Sutter's4dining.com to make online reservations and view their hours and menus. Their menu also offers a summer special section, which gives you a 20% discount Monday through Thursday from 4 p.m. until close. Enjoy! For reservations, call 805-520-4797 or go to www.suttersfordining.com on the web.
Thank you so much. Mm-hmm. And if you're just now joining us, we're on the phone with Jeannie Skatsaris. She's written three books, one of which has not yet been published, which the one we've been talking about, Dance Like You Mean It. And Jeannie, you're back with us.
Yes.
Okay, then. All right, the question I have for you is, you're sitting in front of your laptop someday, possibly with a glass of wine, possibly without, and you think to yourself, by golly, I'm going to write a book. And you write a book. How does that come about?
You know, a friend of mine and I used to exchange books a lot. And some of the books that we were reading, we were like, really, this got published? And we both looked at each other, and we said, okay, we can do this. We can write a book. And that's how it started.
Uh-huh.
And I started Dance Like You Mean It back in, gosh, the late 90s.
Holy miracle, really?
And I didn't know what I was doing.
Uh-huh.
I just threw some stuff out. Didn't know how to write a story. Didn't know how to structure anything. And I don't know. It just I finally started taking some classes. There's a Southern Methodist University has a good novel course here. So I took that, and one thing led to another, got a good critique group, and then I wrote Dance Like You Mean It.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then, you know, you just keep going, get that one done, you get another one in your head, and you start writing that one.
I'm living that dream right now. Sometimes I think it's a nightmare. Sometimes I think it's a curse. But, you know, you're right. You finish one and you think, okay, I'm taking time off now. Thank you for playing. You're right back into the typewriter again, and there's another story coming out. So,
right.
That's what I do. Okay. The writing process itself. What is your writing process like? Oh, no, well, before you answer that, let's go back to tell us about Jeannie Skatsaris. Tell us about, okay, first of all, what is... Wait a minute, I have to get this right. A sonographer.
What is a sonographer?
A sonographer, it's not a typist. It's not somebody who sits in a courtroom.
Right.
It is a person who looks at people with sound waves. So I work for OB-GYNs, so I look at babies pretty much all day.
Oh, okay. Ultrasounds, like.
Ultrasound.
Okay, all right. I got it.
Yeah.
I got
yeah.
it. So that's what you do. Oh, you sit there and look at bellies all day long.
Just. Yeah, big bellies.
God, how exciting is
you
that?
You name it. I stand it.
Okay, writing process. You're holding down a job. Because you don't sound like a woman that's foolish enough to give up your day job.
Not yet.
Okay, no. Good girl.
I actually have a pretty cool day job. So.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, yeah, I got a kind of a cool day job, too. So, but I 10 hours a day gets old. All right.
Yeah.
You come home, you have your wine, you have your glass of coffee or whatever you do. You sit down, talk to your family, then you break out the laptop, and what goes on?
You know, I don't write very much during the week.
Mm-hmm.
My writing is done on the weekends.
Okay.
And I will take my computer and go somewhere. I cannot write at home.
Oh,
there's
okay.
too many distractions.
Right.
I've got laundry. I've got the dishes. I've got something that needs to be done.
Yeah.
A drawer that needs to be cleaned out. But I just can't concentrate sitting at home. So I will go to a coffee shop and write. And my books can get kind of emotional, and I'll be sitting there writing, and, you know, I may hit a scene that will make me cry or make me laugh, and people at the coffee shop think I'm just this nutty lady who's crying into my, you know, laptop.
Well, you don't go to the same coffee shop all the time, do you? So they get used to seeing you sitting there crying
actually,
and laughing.
Actually, no. You know, I kind of go, I know the circuit around here.
Yeah. But now they know you, so, you know, they look to see you coming and go,
crazy lady again.
Don't talk to her. She's nuts. If she breaks out the laptop, everybody run.
Yeah. I usually get my own table, at least. I don't have to share.
Do you work with an outline, or you just free flow?
You know, I free flow, and I wish I could be organized enough to have an outline.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I have not sat down and outlined a story yet. I just sit down and write. And like I said, the characters just move it forward.
Mm-hmm.
And do you work on more than one project at a time, or do you just, you know, you've got one book and you just work on that till it's done, or are you working on multiple texts, possible texts?
Just one book at a time. I can't have too many voices in my head. Usually it's just one project. And then, you know, that's why, you know, it's this book has taken so long to finally get published, is because, you know, I finished it or thought I finished it, would start another book, and then would start, you know, querying that one. In the meantime, I'd have another book going in my head. I put the other book down, start another one. So it's like I can write, I just can't seem to get, you know, it's the final editing, publishing that I get lost in.
Do you find yourself going back and rereading your work and going, oh, God, that sucks. I'm going to have to rewrite this. Yeah, I think we all do that. But, you know, it's the worst thing you can do is self-edit. I learned that a long time ago.
I can't self-edit. I can't even spell.
Well, you know, computers have this wonderful thing. It's called spell check. Turn it on.
You did.
And it doesn't always understand the word.
It does not always give you the right spelling.
No, it doesn't.
That is true.
Yeah, and never do a global change because that'll...
Oh
no, 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 no. No. I do a find. Find this word, boom. It just goes, you know, to the next one, the next one, the next one, and just fix it that way. I do that with names, too. If I get a name wrong, then I have to go back and look at all the names. And I go, oh, God.
What are you reading right now? Have you got something on your bedside table that you've been enjoying this summer?
Yes. Midnight Assassin, Skip Hollingsworth, Texan author you may know, Jim, from your cowboy books.
Heard of him. Have not read any of his stuff.
It's a historical book.
Mm-hmm.
So that is good. And then I just finished a Leanne Moriarty book. Oh, so funny. What was the name of it? The Last Anniversary. Oh, it was great. I love her writing. I wish I could write like that. You know, she's
maybe you
very,
do write like that and
witty.
You just don't see it.
Yeah.
Well, I wish I were that witty.
That was an offhand compliment, incidentally.
Thank you.
Didn't catch that.
Thank you.
Okay, now we have a question for you. This is something we ask every writer. And Cassie had it while writing her book.
Yes, she did.
Have you ever had writer's block?
Oh, yes.
Whoa, that was fast.
Well, what writer hasn't? Yeah.
I can't think of any, but we've had writers in here that say it doesn't exist.
We've had a few that say, yeah, no, what's that?
Never.
What does that term mean to you? How do you interpret that?
Well, I don't know. I don't want to say that I sit down in front of the computer and can't do anything.
Uh-huh.
I just can't do what I intended or would have hoped to have written something good. So, but I still write. I will still put something down on paper, whether it's good or bad.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll go back and look at it and go, what was I thinking, you know, and and change later. But I do try to just keep moving forward.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think,
and,
you know,
in fact, I have another book that's halfway done that all of a sudden I just stopped. I'm like, you know what? That's it. I have nothing else to say. So I need to pull that book back out eventually.
I actually have one of those, too, that I've never gotten past the second chapter. Just isn't there.
I'm about halfway through the whole book.
It just isn't there anymore. Just doesn't intrigue me, so I just can't write it.
So
you know, and sometimes you try to pick a subject that's too close to you, and even though you know the subject matter really, really well, it's too close to you emotionally to be able to write the story. I found that to be true as well.
Which makes sense.
Yeah. I had a we had a guest in here, Jeff
MacArthur.
And we had spoken after the show, and he's doing an anthology on Vietnam stories. And I wrote one for him, and it was really hard to do that because you have to really dig into your psyche and get that story back out. And it took me, golly, weeks.
I didn't know that you did that.
Yeah.
Well, you know, whenever you write, I mean, you bare your soul pretty much.
Yeah, you do.
Down on paper.
You do. But when you're pulling up memories from a time that you really kind of don't want to remember.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, that's hard.
And it is hard. But, I mean, I managed to get it out, and he liked it, so...
That's good.
It's only like 5 pages. It's not really long, but it's...
Is it published somewhere?
It's going to be. It's going to be. It's actually... if you see an anthology by Jeff MacArthur on Vietnam stories, it's called Short Time.
Ah.
And it's a radio telephone operator that's only got like 10 days left in the Nam, and he's on his very last patrol. And just stuff hits the fan.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
Yeah, it is actually pretty good because I was a radio telephone operator in Vietnam, so I got all the jargon
down.
Oh,
wow, the lingo.
I
didn't know that about you.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, I got all that stuff down, so it was just like second nature for me to write it. But anyway, I digress. We're talking about you, not me.
That's all right. No, you're probably more interesting than I am.
No, I don't think so.
I lead a very boring life.
No. Do your characters ever surprise you?
Oh, yes.
That's
all
a great
the time.
Question.
And what? And when they? And do you go along with the surprise, or do you change? Do you go along with it, or do you change it, or
depends. I mean, if it goes completely off the storyline, I try to get it back.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes that character is moving it off the storyline for a reason,
mm-hmm.
and then you go, oh, that's where you're going. Sometimes the characters do things that I don't want them to do, and that happens a lot.
But that's part of the writing.
I guess.
Yeah, I think.
It drives me nuts.
Especially when they argue with you about it.
I know. It's like, get back here.
Yeah. No, I'm going over here.
You're on page 38. Get back in here.
And your agent is Jeannie Loyacano, a good friend of ours and good friend of the writer's block. And tell us how you hooked up with Jeannie.
Yeah, that's a good question.
I pretty much, you know, threw myself at her feet and begged for mercy. No, I was at a book signing with the two young adults in Denton, Texas. And Jeannie, very personable, as you know,
mm-hmm.
is walking around to each table. And she goes, I'm a literary agent. And I'm like, oh, I need one of those, you know. So she gave a talk, and I went and listened to her talk, and I was really impressed with her. So I went right back out, and I queried her, mm-hmm. and I said, you know, I've got these two books. They're already published. And she rejected me.
Because they were already published.
They were already published.
Right.
But they were self-published books.
Right.
But she said, no, that she wouldn't touch a self-published book. So I'm like, oh, man. So then I thought, I remembered Dance Like You Mean, and I'm like, man, I haven't looked at that in a while. So I pulled it out, dusted it off, emailed it, and she took it. So
that's a great story.
Very happy about that.
Yeah.
So the other two books, you independently published those?
Yes.
Okay.
I did.
And how was that process for you?
You know, I'm kind of old school. I was really resistant to it at first. I was like, there's no way I'm going to do a self-published book.
Mm-hmm.
But after attending a number of conferences and, you know, hearing these speakers talk and realizing and seeing those pie charts of what the publishers take and, you know, how much it
right.
takes to get any money back, the only way to go was to self-publish.
Right, right.
So I did. I did those two books self-published, and it was great. It was a good process, but my weakness is marketing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't do it very well.
Yeah.
So
that's the downfall with most independent publishers. I mean, we call it shameless self-promotion, because we don't have any shame. We self-promote all the time. But a lot of writers don't know how to do that.
Musicians don't. Artists don't.
Yeah,
I'm the person that creates it. That's my highest and best use is that I create it. I'm not about the marketing piece.
Right.
And
we
find that a lot throughout the creative world.
If you're a left brain, you're a left brain. Mm-hmm. You know, your right brain can't function very well. So.
And some people are they're humble. They're not comfortable promoting it. You know, they feel like that's boastful, or it's not good enough. You know, that's not really
right.
They just want to go back to create the next thing. Those voices are yelling at them. I've got stories to tell. You know, I don't have time to market. So I think you're not alone in that feeling at all.
No, not at all.
Yeah,
not at all.
Yeah.
But I'm glad you hooked up with Jeannie, because she really is a nice lady.
She is.
Yes.
She is.
Yes.
I've been very happy with her. So we're just moving forward. I'm hoping that with Dance Like You Mean It, that the other two books will. Kind of follow along on the coattails of that, and we'll just keep writing.
Right.
And if I can and of course, as an author, even with a publisher and an agent, you still have to market.
You still have to promote.
But that is
absolutely.
My biggest weakness is getting the books out there.
Right. Well, we can tell you, libraries are good, bookstores are good. I mean, there's a gal in San Diego that's all she does. She goes to libraries, and that's Susan.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And she wrote a wonderful novel about a murder in San Diego in 1933.
33.
Yeah.
San Diego, it's our favorite place. We go there every year for vacation.
Oh, you will. I'll email you. Rest Now, My Beloved was the name of that book.
Great book.
Another book I couldn't put down. I'll send you the information. You would thoroughly enjoy it.
Yeah, you will enjoy it. Yeah. You will enjoy it a lot. Well, I'm from San Diego, so.
Yeah.
Oh, my brother lives out there, so every year we've been going there.
Oh, good for you. That's a nice place to go. Nice place to visit.
Yeah.
Is there some advice? Is there some advice that you might give to a new author who's kind of getting started and not sure what direction to go?
Yeah, save yourself. Don't do it. No.
And don't wear black socks with tennis shoes.
Yeah, don't wear black socks.
Let me write that down.
Just enjoy the process.
Yeah, that's what my creative writer teacher always said.
Taking these classes at SMU and forming this critique group and just being with other writers, your goal is to get a book published.
Right.
But on the other hand, those critique meetings were so much fun. Just sitting down, reading each other's work. And so if you get a good group of people and just think, yeah, you want to get a book published, but on the other hand, it's nice just to go through the process of the writing, the meeting with people, and hoping to get a book published.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're very fortunate.
Once you get a book
here,
published, you're at the mercy of the publisher.
Oh, yes.
On dates and stuff.
Oh, yes. We're very fortunate here in that we have every year, we have the Santa Clarita Cowboy Festival and the Buckaroo Bookstore. And most of the restaurant writers are in there, and we all know each other, and we all sit at tables right next to one another.
It's like old home week.
So we all tell big lies and swap books and but it's a great forum for us because we get to really put our the word of our books out there, because there's a lot of people that roll through that Buckaroo Bookstore.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, cool.
So that's something you may want to look for too. Any kind of a fair or something where you can take your books to?
Book festivals and
such. No, and I look for those. The only problem, I'm usually like 2 weeks too late to sign up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or they're like six states over. Yeah, yeah. Well, look, we're going to have to move along here because we're almost out of time. Would you like to give our listening public your contact information, if you would, please?
Okay. The Facebook page is Jean Scartieris. It's easy, right?
Yeah.
it's J-E-A-N-N-E, and then Skartsiaris, S-K-A-R-T-S-I-A-R-I-S. You can find me on Facebook, Jean Skartsiaris, author, and then, or www.jeanskartsiaris.com. And I'm on Twitter. I can't figure it out, but I'm on it.
I'm with you. I don't. I guess I tweet, but I don't really know that I'm doing it.
I don't even go there, so.
It's just so overwhelming. Who has the time?
Yeah.
Seriously.
Yeah.
So, yes, please find me on Facebook.
Okay. And we actually had another writer from Dallas or Dallas area here.
Yes, we did.
A couple weeks ago. Kathleen, what was her last name? She was such a sweetheart, too.
I'm drawing blank.
She's the one that also has Jeannie Loicano.
Yes, we've had a number of.
And she actually told us that she had she actually stalked Jeannie for a couple of years before she finally signed with her. So. And next month we actually have one of Jeannie's agents going to be on, Melissa Carrigy. She'll be on the show.
Oh,
with us.
Good. Well, so. She was. Represents me on Dance Like You Mean It.
Oh, does she? Oh, good. Oh, good.
Yes, Jeannie and Melissa both.
Good, yeah. She's a nice gal.
Cool.
So, yes,
and she's
nice.
Also an author, so she's going to talk about her book as well. So it's going to be fun. It's been.
I'm going to have to listen.
Yeah.
Well, actually, you should go back and listen to all the podcasts.
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, I do.
They're all fun. And we absolutely enjoyed having you on our show. Thank you so much for taking the time out of your evening to join us. And,
thank you.
I understand that it's like almost 10 o'clock there, and, you know, it's probably close to your bedtime.
Past my bedtime. That's
well,
okay.
There you go. See?
Mine's just getting started.
You know, when we were on at 8 o'clock, right now it would be almost 11 for you.
I know. It's really nice to be
and
on
the
and
East
hour
Coast,
earlier.
They used to get on at 11.
Yeah,
you
I
go,
know.
Oh,
I know.
Man. But not anymore. Now they get on 10, so they're kind of happy about that. Actually, we haven't had the East Coaster since we moved to 7.
Right. We haven't.
So thank you again. Jean, for joining us, Jean Skartsiaris.
Thank you for having me.
And always a pleasure. And please feel free, if you ever have anything going on, you want to let us know when the publication date is, please feel free to call us anytime, Thursday evening between 7 and 9.
And
or
post
7 and
on
8,
our Facebook page.
Or post on our Facebook page. And just let us know what's going on with you, would you please?
I will. Okay.
And you'll have your All mug right, in then. A couple days.
Thank you so, so much, you guys. I really enjoyed it.
Our pleasure. We enjoyed having you. Thank you so much.
All right, bye-bye.
Good
bye-bye.
Night.
Bye.
Jean Skartsiaris. She's a nice gal.
So
nice gal.
Fun.
And a good
keep,
book.
Keep writing, Jean. Keep writing.
Keep, as Court Joyner says,
we know there's more
fight
stories
on
in there.
Right on. That's it. And keep Starbucks entertained. What the hell? Okay, that's all the time we have for tonight. Thank you so much for joining us again on the Thursday evening. We will be back next Thursday. That will be my last night for a couple weeks. I'm having some surgery done next, a week from Monday, but I will be back in the studio. I'm going to guess, I don't know, probably the 29th. Yeah, you'll be back then too.
Yes, I'll be back on the 29th.
So we'll be back in the studio then. Next week is, our guest is, let me see, is Larry Booker. He's written a number of novels, McGrath novels. I'm not too sure what they are. I haven't gotten into them yet.
We'll be reading them now.
We'll be reading them now, and we're looking forward to talking to Larry next Thursday. Other than that, it's been great having seen you, Bobby. Jim, thank you again, Gene, for joining us, and that's it for us tonight. And y'all have a good weekend, and we'll see you next week.